Welcome to the Construction Industry Podcast. Fresh ideas for today's construction professional. The Construction Industry Podcast is brought to you by Remontech, Remote Monitoring Technologies. Find us on the web at constructionindustrypodcast.com.
Hello everybody, once again, my name is Cesar Abade and I am your construction camera specialist. This is the 43rd episode of the Construction Industry Podcast. And as you know, this is a show dedicated to helping you navigate the waters of the construction industry. Whether you're starting your career right now, have been in the construction industry for years, or if you're a construction project owner or construction business owner, there's always something new related to our beautiful industry we can all learn. Today, I speak with James Salmon from Collaborative Construction Resources on the topic of BIM, or Building Information Modeling. And hello once again. See, I've been meaning to do a show on BIM for a long time now, but I hadn't really decided up until now on the angle I should take. There's so many ways to talk about BIM. So when I met James Salmon online, I thought he'd be a great guest to bring you a great overall introduction to BIM. And not so much from the technical side, but from the communications and the impact that he has on the built environment. Now, during the interview, we talk about a lot, actually, about integrated project delivery. So if you haven't listened to episode 39 of the Construction Industry Podcast, you might want to do that first. And it's going to give you a good overall introduction to IPD. And my interview with James will make a lot more sense. And if you'd like to check that out, you can go to either go to constructionindustrypodcast.com and when you land on that page, there's a list of all the episodes. Just look for episode 39. Or you can just go directly to remontech.com/039. And Remontech is spelled R-E-M-O-N-T-E-C-H. Again, remontech.com/039. Or visit constructionindustrypodcast.com and look for episode 39 there on the list of previous episodes. James is president of Collaborative Construction Resources, a company that empowers stakeholders in the construction industry to utilize collaborative agreements, BIM, and lean construction methods to deliver construction services more efficiently and productively. James is an experienced construction lawyer, and he serves on both the National Building Information Model Standards Project Committee and the Build Smart Alliance's Business Process Integration Task Team, or BPITT. James and his family live in Fort Thomas, Kentucky, and he spoke with me today from his office in Cincinnati, Ohio. Enjoy the interview.
And now, our feature segment.
Good morning, James. How are you, my friend?
Good morning, Cesar. I'm good.
So you're not a morning person, huh?
No, not for everybody, but for you.
Well, I'll tell you, we were just talking before we recorded, started the recording, and I was just telling you that I'm most productive in the morning. I like to be done by like 9:30 with my to-do list. Not for everybody, as I understand.
Now, if you spent much time as a litigator or an attorney, you would discover that your to-do list begins to blow up by around 10 or 11 a.m. and gets worse as the day progresses.
Fair enough. Okay, James. So for a long time here on the Construction Industry Podcast, I've been meaning to talk about BIM. And I was just having a hard time finding the right guest. And we started communicating on LinkedIn. You own a group there, a group discussion. On the topic, and I thought you'd be a good guest to talk about this. So thanks for being on the show.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So tell us a little bit about you and how you got to be where you are today.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, my background is as an attorney. I spent 20 years litigating complex construction cases of every stripe, and it didn't take very long for me to begin to wonder why the same problems manifested themselves over and over again. And doing a little forensic analysis of or autopsies on failed construction projects, I came to the conclusion that failure to communicate is at the heart of almost every construction dispute. And I began to cast about for ways to deliver better legal services to my clients. And I came across the integrated project delivery process. And this was back in the early 2000s, 2002, 2003. And I also came across this process called BIM, Building Information Modeling. And it made a lot of sense to me at the time because I was litigating construction cases and litigating products liability cases. And in both of those arenas, it's important to convey to the jury exactly what went wrong and why. And when you do that with a set of visual aids that helps the jury see what went wrong, it makes your job as an attorney a lot easier. So the building information modeling that I was seeing was very intriguing. And I thought that the technology combined with a better approach to the legal instruments would be beneficial to the industry as a whole. So I proposed at my old law firm that we create a new practice group that was in the business of delivering integrated legal services. So the idea was to bring the transactional lawyers from the real estate and banking and lending side of the practice together with the litigators who represented owners and contractors and designers in live construction disputes and form teams that were capable of helping owners, contractors, and designers as an integrated team put together a new generation legal instrument that put everybody on the same page from the outset. And I ran that idea up the flagpole 2 years in a row at the law firm, and it was not well received. And I wound up launching Collaborative Construction in 2007-2008 timeframe, and began to deliver those kinds of services on my own. So at that point in time, I was delivering what I would call IPD facilitation services. So I was helping form integrated teams that were made up of owners, contractors, and designers who were capable of coming together and signing at least a tri-party agreement between the owner, the contractor, and the designer, and ultimately putting a legal framework in place that others who came to join the project later would sign on to and agree to abide by. And as I moved that legal process forward, I came to learn more and more about BIM and the benefits of BIM and to understand that it's a lot more than just a modeling process. It's a lot more than just a design tool. It's really a new business model and fits very, very well with the integrated project delivery concept. So again, you know, sort of my background as a litigator was that it's good to be able to show people what's happening and why it's happening, and the BIM allows you to do that.
Very good. So you said you had trouble running this up the flagpole. Are you meaning to tell me that people don't like change?
That's one way to put it. people do not like to have their traditional revenue stream disrupted. And right. The litigators in the law firm took the position that if we do this too well, then there's a risk that we won't have any litigation, that it'll eat into our fees and revenue associated with litigating cases.
Right.
And the reality is that there will always be stupid people and there will always right. be litigation. But our job as attorneys, I don't think, is to necessarily, you know, find and promote litigation. It's to solve problems. That's why I went into the profession, was to help my clients solve their problems. And in the built industry, there are plenty of problems, and we need to leverage these innovative solutions.
Very good. Now, when do you remember what was the first time? Well, when was the first time that you encountered BIM, and how was your reaction to it, and what did you think of it? Before we talk about what it is and all that, mm-hmm. just your own experience.
Well, I had a good deal of experience with virtual design tools and the delivery of modeled design work as an attorney. I was involved in a number of different products liability cases where we hired experts to model the product that failed. And I had been exposed to some very high-end virtual designs of products that were the subject of products liability lawsuits. So I was operating under the misimpression that the design industry used these on a regular basis. And when I began to defend architects and engineers whose designs had failed in some way and they became embroiled in litigation, I was actually surprised to learn that almost everything was done in a 2D environment. And initially, I didn't think very much about it. But then as I began to look into the concepts of integrated project delivery and building information modeling as a tool and a process to support what I wanted to do for my clients in the legal framework, I began to realize that this BIM technology was probably important. And the first time I ever saw a what would be called a, you know, something that is more like a BIM software tool in the industry, I attended a online webinar presented by Kimon Onuma. And Kimon has a software tool or process called the Onuma Planning System. And the thing that blew my mind that day was he took an Excel spreadsheet and poured it over into the Onuma planning system, created a 3D image of a building and dropped it in Google Earth live. And I was blown away by the possibilities of that kind of technology. And as I began to investigate, I discovered, of course, that, you know, this is all completely doable. It's just a matter of overcoming the resistance to change, as you said earlier, and getting people to open their eyes to the possibilities.
Yeah. Now, every time I read about BIM and Introduction to BIM, and I started reading a book a while back. It's a tome on this. And but pretty much everywhere, every time there's an introduction to BIM, they say BIM is way more than simply 3D AutoCAD, right? Mm-hmm. So just let's take a step back here, and can you describe what BIM is, like for the layperson?
Yeah, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it is a process that allows you to take virtually any design and visualize it. Now, you can visualize with CAD, but the 3D element, the modeling element in BIM, is important. the acronym stands for Building Information Modeling. And I've always viewed that as a very restrictive definition of BIM. It does convey the basics, which is that you're creating a model of a building and it contains information about the building. The best way for a layperson to understand it is if you have a good integrated BIM model, you've Googleized your building. So a good integrated BIM is going to allow you to click on any element or component part of that building and pull up information that's related to that component part. And the other important thing about BIM is it's good integrated BIM is parametric. So in the design process, if you move a beam or you move a door or a window, that movement is reflected in throughout the entire design, and it adjusts the entire design parametrically, and you don't have to go and change the location of that door on every floor or change the location of a beam in every floor. And it also, good intelligent BIM software tools will tell you when you're doing something incorrectly. It will say, hey, you can't move that beam over there. So that, I think, you know, the Googleizing your building, I think, is a good way to summarize it for the layperson.
Mm-hmm. And I think, especially when it comes to litigation and the job that you do there from, you know, collaboration, communication, it really helps because everything is clear and information is at the click of a mouse, right? So you can quickly, for example, you know, estimate, you know, amount of concrete that's going to take. The system can do that for you, and you don't have to really, basically, you don't need to estimate. It can tell exactly how much concrete you're going to need for this design based on the model, correct?
That's correct. And you, I guess one of the first things that BIM is going to be used for is to establish liability in these complex construction disputes. I think it's good because I think that the liability will be established more quickly. People will know who was at fault more readily because with a good BIM, there'll be less confusion. But I think that the concept of, I call it forensic BIM, I think is going to be one of the first uses of BIM, and that's going to entail, I tell my design clients this all the time, but I'm beginning to share the same basic concept with owners and contractors. BIM is emerging as the new standard of care. What would a reasonable and competent professional in your setting, in your geographic area, do in designing a facility or operating a facility or constructing a facility? The emerging standard of care is that they would utilize these virtual planning, design, and construction tools to do their job. And if they rely on 2D drawings and don't leverage these virtual design tools, then I think in the very near future they will be deemed to have fell below the standard of care that's expected of a professional in that setting, whether it be a design professional or a project management professional or someone involved in operations and maintenance.
Mm-hmm. Now, James, you also talk about federated BIM. You mentioned that on when we were exchanging emails before this. What is federated BIM?
Okay, I mentioned integrated BIM a moment ago. And in my view of BIM, there are really three levels of BIM. There's simple BIM, which allows you to render the model and see the model with respect to a particular stakeholder's view. So you can have an architect's BIM model. And that architectural model may contain a lot of elements of the building, but a lot of those elements are just developed to the design intent level. And that BIM is only the vision of the architect. Separately, you will have a structural steel model, and that BIM is created by the structural engineer. Separate from that, you may have a model that is related to the building envelope, and a different design professional will have created that BIM. So in the typical project, as we move forward and begin to try to leverage the various BIMs that have been created, we want to combine the BIM that the architect created with the BIM that the structural engineer created. And then separately, we need the BIM that the MEP contractor created. And when we bring those three BIMs together, and we are able to take the model that depicts the architecture and the model that depicts the structural steel and the model that depicts the MEP, the mechanical, electrical, and plumbing aspects of the project, all of a sudden we're able to do a whole lot more with conflicts and identifying clashes and resolving issues. So a federated BIM is a model that is a compilation of multiple models. So you have the architectural, the structural steel, and the MEP combined, and we would call that a federated BIM model. Well, people don't like the phrase BIM model. The technicians will say that's an incorrect statement. You're repeating the word model twice.
Yeah, no, but the M on BIM refers to the building, and when you talk about a BIM model, you're referring to the project and the collaboration. So I think you can say it.
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons I use the term BIM to the X, because when I talk about BIM, I'm not just talking about this traditional building information model. The B in BIM to me stands for a whole lot more than just the building. The I stands for a whole lot more than just the information. The I, for example, so stands for integration. It also stands for intelligence. It stands for innovation. You know, that I can be more than one thing. The M, likewise, as you alluded to, stands for more than just a model. I often refer to business information management. All right, there's a BIM for you. That's something that you can do very effectively if you have a good classic BIM, building information model. If your building information model has everything in it should have in it, then it's also a business information model. It's a business information management tool. So the M stands for way more than just model. And so, again, that's why I say BIM to the X, mm-hmm. and put it in parentheses.
Right. Now, you talked about the three levels of BIM, and how does that work when you're working in an IPD project? Do they get developed at the same time? Are they three separate entities in that case, or they get developed together organically?
What happens with the best way to imagine your BIM in a good IPD setting? Well, let's back up just a little bit. IPD, integrated project delivery, is by its very definition very project centric. Okay. So good IPD happens on a specific project where an owner and a contractor and a designer have come together and crafted a legal instrument that is tri-party in nature and allows them all to coordinate and work together on the project. So the BIM that's associated with that piece of the IPD process should in actuality have quite a bit of prior development. So if we back up to a little bit earlier stage and we talk about integrated procurement, if we move back a step and we ask what was that owner trying to get, then in an integrated BIM world, the owner will have put together a program that contains a lot of information and intelligence about the building or the facility and the supporting infrastructure that they want. And there will be some BIM already in existence before any of the project participants even begin to come together. So the way I view BIM, I like to say that an owner starts off with a little teacup of information, and that's their BIM. And the only thing in that teacup in the beginning may be the, you know, GPS coordinates for 9 different potential locations for this facility. And the facility is literally just a idea in the owner's mind. But owners spend an awful lot of time, energy, and money investigating site selection and going through all those processes. And after, and in fact, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on site assessment plans and related professional services. Unfortunately, most of that work product comes to them in binders or on CDs in PDF format, and they save it and put it in a drawer or put it in a file folder in a computer, and nobody ever looks at it again. And then they make a selection and they decide to put out an RFP and call for bids from designers to design this facility once they've selected a site. But the designer doesn't get the benefit traditionally of all that information that is already in the teacup, right? Mm-hmm. So let's have that teacup grow over the life of the facility. That BIM teacup becomes a bucket, and you pour more information into the BIM, and it grows. And in the integrated project delivery phase of things, we have all kinds of information that's being created by all kinds of stakeholders. And that information is poured into the BIM. Some of it comes from the site excavation folks. Some of it comes from the foundation people. Some of it comes from the civil engineer. Some of it comes from the public utility company. Some of it comes from dozens of different sources of information come together to inform the design, architectural, structural engineering, the steel detailer, the MEP contractor. All these folks pour information into the BIM, and it becomes a bigger and bigger bucket. And eventually, if you're a portfolio owner, if you own multiple facilities and you have control of infrastructure that supports multiple facilities, you no longer have a bucket of information. You've got an entire 500-gallon tank full of information. And it can all be BIM. And if we view, the global built environment and the physical world as the ultimate BIM, there's the ocean of data that's out there, and each owner's BIM is a part of that ocean of data. And the challenge here in the 21st century is to advance or improve our old school built industry business processes and bring them up to 21st century standards, and let's put building processes and business models in place that allow everyone to take advantage of that ocean of BIM data that's out there. And it's not just BIM in the built industry. It's big data of all kinds. Mm-hmm.
So, James, can you tell us a little bit about how BIM can help with the commissioning of a new building?
Sure. I alluded to the concept of Googleizing your building earlier. And I think that that's what owners are beginning to expect from the built industry professionals who plan, design, and construct their facilities. What has typically happened at the commissioning phase is that notebooks full of information are handed off to the owner, and then the owner, both the operations folks and the maintenance folks, send out their own people to assess, and they typically do the assessment in a written format. And what it amounts to is an incredible reinvention of the wheel by the owner. So there's a lot of time and energy wasted gathering data about the facility by operations and maintenance in order to conduct operations and maintenance in an intelligent way. If, as a built industry, we deliver to an owner a digital asset that works for the owner, then the owner won't have to recreate the wheel. So the goal of good integrated BIM is to create BIM that can be poured over and seamlessly interact with the owner's operations and maintenance software tools and processes. We are not quite there yet, but there are a number of good companies that are scrambling to meet this need. It's important from the owner's perspective because the vast majority of the cost of your capital costs as an owner are tied up in operations and maintenance. If you look at the typical capital budget of a major owner that has a large portfolio of existing properties and infrastructure, and one that procures new facilities and infrastructure on a pretty regular basis, approximately 85 cents on the dollar of that capital budget is allocated to operations and maintenance costs, while only about 15 cents on the dollar is consumed by planning, design, and construction services. So the goal is to arm that owner with a digital asset that allows them to operate and maintain that building more intelligently. And there's some really basic benefits: improved energy efficiency, improved ability to deliver maintenance services effectively. There are some, you know, no-brainer issues that almost any owner can recognize with respect to reducing the cost of that 85 cents on the dollar. And the reason it's so attractive to owners is because you're going to reduce that 85 cents on the dollar cost of operations and maintenance year over year for the next 40 or 50 or 70 or 80 years, however long it is that you continue to operate and maintain this facility and the supporting infrastructure. That's how long you're going to could be able to leverage these benefits. So there's a tremendous opportunity from the owner's perspective to save money over time. And that's being driven by two interesting and almost competing concepts. On the one hand, there's a big movement afoot for increased budgetary and fiscal sanity. So there are a lot of people advocating that we spend less money and that we save money And so governmental entities especially are under pressure to control their budgets. And I think that pressure will increase. At the same time, we've got a green agenda out there that is pressing mightily for increased energy efficiency and reduced carbon footprints. And the irony is that those two, you know, you typically view those goals as not necessarily linked. But if you want to reduce your costs, BIM and IPD can help you reduce your cost. If you want to increase energy efficiency, then BIM and IPD can help you increase energy efficiency. If you want to reduce your carbon footprint, if you want to be able to plan, design, and construct a facility that is close to net zero energy consumption, you can't do it without leveraging this new generation of virtual planning, design, and construction tools. So the BIM is critical to that green agenda. It's also critical to this cost control agenda. So I think on a going forward basis, we're going to have pressure from both sides to deploy and utilize BIM and IPD more effectively.
Very good. Yeah, it's almost like when it comes to project and operations, there used to be a very, the line between them is just kind of blurry now because one feeds into the other and vice versa. With BIM, we look at the building as an organic unity that includes the construction and the commissioning and maintenance. So we look at it as a unit, as opposed to, okay, this is the project, now I'm done, here's the key, good luck, you know, and then they have to figure out how to maintain it and operate it.
Well, one of the laments of everyone in the industry is that the built industry is siloed, is the way they put it. They say, you know, it's a fragmented industry, and, you know, the designers are in a silo, and the constructor, the GC is in a silo, and the trade contractors are in a silo. But what everyone ignores is the fact that owners are siloed as well. So you've got a procurement office, and they have their blinders on, and they're fixated on that 15 cents on the dollar. And they get kudos and raises and pats on the back for whittling that number down. And if they can send out a design bid build package that results in the procurement number being lower than expected, then they think they've got a win. And that procurement officer has never talked to anybody in operations or maintenance. They don't communicate.
James, you like to talk about the knowledge economy. What do you mean by that?
Well, the knowledge economy is the economy that is coming on via the internet primarily and will replace our old industrial economy. And if you look at the arc of history, we had a very, very long period of time in which the entire world operated on a agricultural economy. So up until about 1850, the entire planet operated on our agricultural economy. And in 1850, more than 90% of the world's population was involved in one way or another in the production of food. By 1950, just 100 years later, we had completely converted to the industrial economy and had moved from a workforce in which over 90% of the people were involved in the production of food to a workforce where over 90% of the population was involved in the production of things. So in that 100-year time frame, our economy revolutionized, and we are now going through a similar revolution, and it's happening at a much more rapid pace with a lot more disruptive change occurring as we move from that old industrial economy to this new knowledge economy. And a knowledge economy is one in which the business models and the process of making money and exchanging services depends on the participants in the economy having a knowledge key that they can insert and unlock information with. We talked earlier about this enormous ocean of data that the world is swimming in. That ocean of data is growing at an incredible rate. People talk about the information age. The information age, the way I view it, it ran from about 1430 when Gutenberg invented the printing press until 1991 when Al Gore invented the internet. So we've got the information age where data is being collected in a variety of formats, and we're really learning a lot of things and we're accumulating information. Once the internet took off, then we entered this, you know, the first phase of this creation of this knowledge economy, because no longer was that information just recorded and static in libraries and books and things. It now came available on the cloud. And now that information is expanding exponentially every day. You know, terabytes and terabytes worth of information are produced in relation to the drilling and bringing into production of a single natural gas well. The same thing could be said for any piece of infrastructure or any major facility. And what happens is because the internet has such an enormous capacity to house information, we continue to create information at phenomenal rates. And there's simply no way to connect yourself to the fire hose of information and consume it all. So what's happening is Google and Amazon and, you know, innovative companies on the web have begun to enable individual consumers all over the planet to insert a knowledge key and turn that key and extract a piece of information that they need. The classic example of this is the new generation travel services. So let's say you and I come to an agreement that we want to do a workshop in Calgary sometime. You've got to get to Calgary and I've got to get to Calgary, and we're going to physically meet there. So we travel, and the internet allows us to log on to any number of travel sites, which all the airlines feed their data and information into. And I can pick a date and a time and a flight and a price that I'm happy with, and I can consume that service. And there are a whole bunch of different entities out there that are delivering bits and pieces of that process. But the only thing I'm concerned about is the price and the date and getting on the plane. And that's a microcosm of this knowledge economy. And that knowledge economy is coming to the built industry. We're moving from the internet of information that simply stores the information and lets people access it to an internet of things where physical reality, the physical world, is connected to that internet world in much more sophisticated ways. And the business models that work in a knowledge economy are going to be radically different than the business models that worked in the industrial economy. By 2050, and probably by 2020 or 2030, and many people would say we're virtually there already, there are going to be, we're going to have moved from this place in 1950, where over 90% of the people were involved in creating things, to a place where over 90% of the population is involved in leveraging knowledge in this knowledge economy in some way. People are going to develop specialized skill sets that relate to, you know, they're going to have a knowledge key that allows them to unlock access to this ocean of information and services that someone else needs, and we're going to be willing to pay for it. And it is an extremely exciting time. And the old school thought process that we must have manufacturing jobs and we must have, you know, this old school economy, we've got to get past that and get on to embracing this exciting new world, because there's all kinds of opportunities there, things we can't even fathom yet.
Mm-hmm. And BIM fits right in to that.
Oh, it's a huge piece. It's a huge piece of the puzzle.
Very good. Now, James, if people want to learn more about you and what you do, where should they go?
If you Google James L. Salmon on the internet, you'll probably find me in a variety of places. I have the Collaborative Construction blog on Google. I have a website, collaborativeconstruction.com. I have a LinkedIn group called Collaborative BIM Advocates, and I am a principal in a new enterprise called No Silos at nosilos.com. And I offer a series of interesting workshops relative to something called the Smart Game Changer Series, which will be launching in the summer and fall of this year. So just Google me and you can probably find me.
Okay. And I'll add some of these links that you mentioned onto the show notes for this episode. So James, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, no, it was a great information. Good, high level, 30,000 foot view of BIM is and where it fits into the not only the built environment but also the today's economy. So thank you very much. So I hope you enjoy my interview there with James Salmon. If you'd like a list of the links that we talked about here with James, you can visit the episode notes for the notes for this episode at constructionindustrypodcast.com, and you look for episode 43 there, or you can go straight to remontech.com/043 and you'll find all the links that we talked about, me and James. You'll find them there at the bottom of the post. And while you're there, why don't you share with us your experience with BIM? Are you new to it? Are you experienced with it? What do you think? Has it helped the projects that you participated in? What was the learning curve? You know, I'm really curious to see how people are introduced to it and how really changes, you know, when rubber meets the road there, right? You know, in the project trailer, for example, how does that impact your projects when you go from not using BIM to using BIM? I'd love to hear from you. Again, go to remontech.com/043. So that's our show for today. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, you can leave us a rating or a review on iTunes so other people may also find the show. You can also view the show notes for this episode by visiting constructionindustrypodcast.com. I'm Cesar Bade, your construction camera specialist and a project manager for Remontech, where we have been installing cameras for monitoring construction projects since 2002. Please visit us on the web at myconstructioncamera.com. Have a great week.